that we mentioned in the first hour of that amulet that Mark from Florida talked about a week ago this hour. So he sent those pictures, and in the first hour we talked about it with ML Behrman. Still don't have any kind of final resolution. If you have a thought on that, you're welcome to jump in. I did mention, though, earlier that I had seen Deadpool 2. Actually, I saw it twice this weekend. I'm always interested in narrative, and I like nonfiction narratives as well as fiction narratives, and I like when that whole Deadpool series breaks the fourth wall, which it does all the time in this movie. But there was a death scene, I don't think I'm giving anything away when I say it, that really choked me up when I was watching the movie. It was a much more of a profound emotional reaction. It had nothing to do with laughter or having any kind of response to the violence. It was just a very fear-producing moment. And I recognized afterward why I was having such a strong reaction to this one death scene in the movie Deadpool 2, and it's because I almost watched my wife get killed the other day. And I'll tell you about that because I'd love to hear your experiences along this line, too, if we want to run a theme through open lines next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. I got a bunch of people lined up right now. We'll get to them right away. Give me 90 seconds. I'll tell you a quick story about something that I keep having nightmares about. And it's something I witnessed. Fortunately, it went slightly differently than the way it was shaping up, but my wife works for Arizona State University for Channel 8, which is the PBS TV affiliate, which is owned by the university. And they have these wonderful luxury buses that connect the campuses. There's about four, now five campuses for Arizona State. So big complex, but these luxury buses, they're like reclining airline seats in the bus and great Wi-Fi. My wife gets her Netflix time going to and from work. She loves taking the bus. And it's kind of her me time thing. And she could drive, but she doesn't want to. And I could drive her. She doesn't want that either. She likes just to, pull up her whatever show she's binging on, get a half hour in before work. So I was picking her up one day and she was standing in front of the bus and she was chatting up the bus driver. And I noticed behind their bus was another bus. So often happens, they all pull up in a line, just like you'd expect it at any, place like that. And the one bus behind her started pulling out. And I'm looking at my wife and the bus driver as they're talking and having this very pleasant conversation. And it looked like they were going to be talking for a second. And I didn't want to honk because I didn't want to make it seem like I was the pushy husband that's going like, come on, let's move it along. So I was just patiently waiting for her to finish the conversation that she was having with the, and I looked like it was going to time out just fine, that the bus that was pulling out and pulling alongside of hers was just, while she was standing there talking to the bus driver, that bus was just going to pull on by. And then for reasons I can't explain, she abruptly finished a conversation just as the other bus that was pulling alongside hit the gas. And she was just about to step in front of this bus. And I'm watching this unfold. And again, like I said, I'd been holding off honking because I didn't want to seem pushy. And I just looked and I waited and I waited and I hit the horn at just the right time. She looked up and I waved to her and the bus, I was like, look out. And the other bus just literally missed her by inches as it went past. And it was so close to watching my wife get hit by a bus. I mean, killed. There was no way she would have survived it. And she knew it afterward. I knew it. And it was only a situation that was developing because it was predicated on the fact that I was trying to be a nice guy and not, rush the conversation that she was having. And yet, it would have been a decision I would have regretted for the rest of my life. And I keep having that nightmare that I don't honk or that the the horn doesn't work. And she steps in front of the bus and she's gone. I don't know if anyone's ever had a similar split second moment like that, where they made a decision which they happily can live with. I hate to hear from anybody who didn't, but we've got the open lines going. And if that's a theme that resonates with you, be careful if you go see Deadpool 2. Jim is on a wild card line in South Carolina. Open lines on Coast to Coast. Jim?
Good morning, Ian. Great to have you back on the radio.
Thank you. Where are you going to take us?
I would like to know if you plan on visiting the Jordanian codices or what was originally dubbed the Smiley Face Murders.
Well, don't think that that wasn't too far from my thought over the last 2 weeks when I was talking about these Mojave murders, especially with the satanic cult theme that ran through both of these shows. You know, I don't know if there's anything new to be updated. I follow that story. I continue to get updates from other people. If I have something, I promise you I will. I don't want to just go back over it, you know, sort of historically, but I do keep a record. I do keep an eye, and if anybody has anything more on that, they can certainly get a hold of me. Jordanian codices. So, you know, these codices that we've talked about, there's been a couple of different ones. I haven't looked lately on that, and I would be curious. So I'll put that on a list, and maybe in the days and weeks ahead, I can find a time to do that show again. You picked a couple of good ones, and thank you for those memories and for calling. George on a wild card line in Corpus Christi. Right. George, open lines. Where are you going to take us?
On the same lines, I guess the Akashic Record, if you're going to have any shows on that in the future, or if Coast to Coast will have any on the line, on the idea that, you know, everything is known for each individual forever and until since the beginning of time. And
yeah,
and that I'm more speaking on a more positive note. Tonight was kind of all negative about murders and
no, that's
like
a fair
that.
Thing.
The,
no, I like the balance
the
of
occult,
that.
You know, the occult and all that stuff, but Edgar Cayce supposedly tapped into that and you know, his ability to heal and to prophetically see things, you know. You know, if you have any shows on that, that'd be interesting. Yeah. Plus the fact that it's so positive to everything. And I know there's always a lot of negativity in the world.
No, these are good. Don't make any apologies for it. It's a good balance, and it's just what we should do all the time. So I'll look for that, and I appreciate that. And I think that that idea of eternal knowledge, of course, is one of my favorite themes. So let's see what's going on that. Scott is in El Centro, California, west of the Rockies. Scott, you've been hanging on for a few minutes. We'll go to you next. Where are you on all this?
How you doing, Ian? It's good to see you back in the limelight. I was just wanted to make a comment about, you know, I live in this area where, you know, in Southern California, desert area, and it's you know, there's a lot of strange stuff that, you know, goes on out here, especially in a place called Slab City.
What?
There's a lot of stuff that, you know, referencing to your guest tonight. Was going to try to make, you know, her, you know, bring that subject matter up. 29 Palms, all this area is...
I want to go back to Slab City. What's Slab City?
It's
Salton Sea.
It's an old military base where people... It's an abandoned military base. And they have, people just... randomly living out there, and it's, you know, homeless people that are living out there, and
are those on
RVs and trailers, and it's there's no law enforcement out there at all.
Oh, I know. Is that kind of like the slab foundations for the old, like, military housing?
Yeah. And they just, but I mean, I don't know if you've seen the movie Into the Wild. It was
directed
by Sean Penn.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I've seen it several times.
And,
great story.
That's, you know, where that kid, he was, you know, staying out there for a while before he, you know, eventually made his way up to Alaska. But that this whole area, your guess was right. There's two, and how Robert was mentioning to you about two-lane highways everywhere.
Yeah.
All over this area.
Oh, that's so interesting.
All over. So.
Yeah.
I mean, it's strange stuff. I mean, a lot of activity happens out in that. In that area, and then you guys were mentioning about, drug labs and stuff out in
all the tweakers, farm. All the tweakers.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's a spectacle in itself.
You know, it took a little while in my sort of Midwestern sensibilities, and thank you, I appreciate that, Scott. It took a little while for me to adjust to. I just don't drive at night in the desert. And so it happens that, you know, now that I live out in the Southwest, at least for a while, I will have to, I'm going to LA or I'm going up to Flagstaff or, you know, I make a point to get off the road at sundown. And it's not just because of hitting animals, and there's a ton of those. But it's because if you hit an animal and you go off the road, there may not be anybody around for a while. And so it's that kind of desolation. So my wife and I pulled over in some town, some hotels, maybe not more than a step up or two from the hotel that we were talking about or the apartment we were talking about last hour. But you know, speaking of my wife, let's see, Rachel is in Rochester, New York, land of my fathers. And Rachel, you experienced something similar that I was just telling you. I just 2 weeks ago, almost saw my wife get hit by a bus because I was holding off honking the horn because I didn't want to seem like I was, you know, rushing her. And I almost regretted it for the rest of my life because of how close she came. Something like this happened to you?
It did, but it was a little different. I believe I was 13 years old, and I believe I predicted what was supposed to be my brother's death at the time, but I had no understanding of what was going on. And as I was getting ready for bed, and it happened to be a night on a storm that I knew I wasn't going to have school the next day. But I still want to understand why this happened. I'm still unclear, but I can vividly remember it. And I started crying, bawling for like an hour, and I could not stop crying, didn't understand why. And something told me to call my mom, and I wasn't going to do it because I didn't want to get in trouble for being on the phone when I was supposed to be in bed, but I did it anyway. And I believe that's what saved my brother's life. Because when I woke up, he was on his deathbed. I told my mom not to let him leave the house. And when I woke up, he was on his deathbed. And he was supposed to get both his legs amputated. He ended up living. He was supposed to get both his legs amputated. He never did. That never happened either. To this day, he's completely fine. And I believe it was because of that phone call.
So interesting. Thank you, Rachel. I appreciate that. Aren't you glad you did? And you don't have to ever live that regret. Perry's in Santa Barbara. Hey, Perry.
Hi, welcome back, my friend. Oh,
thank you. Where do you want to take us?
I want to tell you, some of my favorite shows with you was with Neil Adams.
Batman.
The gentleman that really transformed Batman, in the late 60s and into the 70s and even into the 80s.
Yeah, I was just thinking about him the other day, actually. Now, he was great.
It's ironic.
And he had a much more positive response to the campy 60s TV Batman than I did, because I had sort of learned to resent that Batman. But I will tell you, after he said that, I had to reconsider it. And so he was so like, no, that kind of Batman's cool, too. It took me a while to come around to Neil Adams' position on that, but he was great. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, and hopefully, when you get back on, maybe you can get him back on.
Oh, that'd be fun.
And also Star Trek director Nicholas Meyer.
Oh yeah, loved. I mean, Wrath of Khan. Yeah,
Wrath of Khan. And I just about 2 months ago, I bought the director's cut.
Oh,
it is so much better.
Oh, good. Yeah. He tells great stories. Yeah, I liked him a lot. He also did that great movie called Time After Time, about H.G. Wells having to chase Jack the Ripper into modern San Francisco. It was
What was the actor's name in that?
Well, it was Malcolm McDowell played H.G. Wells, and then David Warner, who, of course, later goes on to be in several Star Trek movies, playing Jack the Ripper, who's just, he was great. Oh, those are great memories. Appreciate that.
All right. You take care now.
Thank you, man.
Hear you on soon. Please let us know.
Whenever they let me on, I'll be back. Appreciate that. Robert is in Portland on Coast to Coast on a wild card line. Robert?
Hey, so I was just outside watching the International Space Station fly over.
Cool.
And it got me wondering what your thoughts were on the whole flat Earth conspiracy and a lot of space travel being a hoax.
I'm not a flat earther. I have too much time spent researching NASA. Actually, lately I wrote a book, I edited a book, about the history of car radio, and one of those chapters I wrote about was about the International Space Station and about this sort of, bear with me because the two tie into each other. What I wrote about was the history of how radio in cars changed radio, period. How radio was programmed changed because radios started being in cars, and how cars changed because suddenly they had radios in them. And they both affected the technology of the other. And then so that brought me around to the fact that NASA used to do these little morning shows for the astronauts. And they would do these little 10-minute morning shows to wake up the astronauts, where they'd play a couple of tunes, do a couple of little jokes, right? And it was this little thing that they were doing in Houston for the astronauts. And one of the space station stories, really interesting to research the space station. So the more I research that, I have a hard time with any flat Earth argument. But are you into it? Are you buying into the flat Earth?
I think some of it's kind of interesting. I'm more into the some of the space travel being more of a hoax and
really
going on in that.
I've talked to a few astronauts. You know, I guess maybe that's it. I've interviewed too many astronauts to think they were lying to me. So I'm probably a victim of too close an exposure on that. But I promise you, Robert, if the opportunity comes up to do a show on it, I will. Let me grab Walt in Allentown before we get to the bottom of the hour, and then we'll run the table for all the rest of the calls coming up before the end of the show on open lines. Walt?
Hello, Ian.
Hey.
My first time talking to you.
Well, thank you. And first time me talking to you, too, then. It's the first time for both of us.
As I was saying to Donna Walker, sadly, these school shootings, I think they've become a sick fad with some of these kids. And they said on the news that, the Parkland kid, that Cruz kid, he's sitting in prison and he's getting sacks full of love letters.
Yep.
From girls from all over the country. So, these kids want to be infamously famous, Ian. I mean, it's a sick thing that's happening.
I agree. And in fact, a lengthier response requires I nudge this break out of our way, and then I will get back to that because I love where you're starting with it, Walt. So I'll give you my thoughts on that coming up after the break. But also on the way, too, we have just some other really interesting topics I can see on the screen, and people who shared my experience of almost watching a loved one be killed, just a split-second decision that saved someone's life. And we'll get to your story on that coming up. We'll roll the numbers for you, too, on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So we'll go to open lines here, and so many people are hanging on. Thank you so much. It'll make a lively last half hour. And I'll start with the last thought from Walt next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So, I think a lot of people in this country have been thinking about the school shooting in Santa Fe, and I joined Walt in his concern about the response that some of these shooters are, this very sort of positive response that some of these school shooters get, where infamy is better than nothing. And just what they wanted was some attention for their problems, for people to care about them. And I was talking about this in on Twitter with some people, if you want to follow me, by the way, at Deacon Punnett on Twitter. And look, I'm not going to get into any kind of political discussion here, but I'll say this. I'm a big believer in working backward from a solution. What solution would have a big impact? And then let's work backward to get to that point. And I do think what we have here is a holistic problem, and holistic problems require holistic solutions. And not any one school district is going to have some sort of panacea. So I think there should be many different responses promoted, allowed, encouraged at many different school systems around the country. And let's see what works. It can't keep going on like this. And so I think that's we all need to agree on that as a nation up front. We can't let a situation continue where more kids are killed in high school than are on battlefields, you know, in the military. And that's what we already have in 2018. So let's please, you know, let's keep an open mind. Is it a matter of there's too many doors? I don't think so, but let's try that in one school. Let's try this. Let's try some other things, though, in other schools, and let's be open to potential solutions. And with regard to these, how these kids are promoted, and, you know, I'll go back to something I said in the first hour, which is I do think we need to take the names of the shooters out of the mix. Let's stop promoting these murder suicides. We don't talk about suicides in the media because it encourages other people to try to seek the same limelight. So let's do that with this too. And then maybe that too will be part of some holistic response. There are no easy solutions. And any one-dimensional response, you know, is really an easy solution. And easy solutions, for my money, are like no solutions with just better PR. So we know it's going to be hard to fix it coming up. We should get to work. Let's get to Doug in Iowa. Go Hawkeyes. Hey, Doug.
Hi, Ian. Glad to hear you back.
Thank you.
I wanted to tell you a story. I was riding my motorcycle with my son. He had his permit. And we were heading down the highway. We were going to turn left to go to his grandparents' house. Well, he passed me a short time before that. And as we were getting ready to turn left, there was a big cargo van turning right. And I was back far enough, I could see a car coming on the other side of the van. And I yelled, no. And he looked back at me, and the car got in front of the van, and he turned and hit the tire and bounced back and only broke his ankle.
Wow.
If he would have gotten out in front of the car,
sure.
Killed him.
Oh, and so I like, you know, this because I just was waiting to the last second, and then I honked, and my wife was able to avoid getting hit by that bus. But I keep having these flashbacks to what if I didn't do that? And what if I just thought, oh, well, you know, she's a big woman, she'll figure it out, and then boom, you know, and I can't live with that. It's killing me that I haven't found a way yet to contextualize it, but I'm glad I'm not alone. And so glad your kid is okay, and thank you, Doug, for sharing that. Tom is in the Bronx on Coast to Coast AM,
yes,
on a wild card line.
How are you, sir? I'd like to say that years back, I was walking across the street to a grocery store that's right across the street from me, and there were these two characters that were hiding under an underpass that was being worked on, and they obviously mistook me for somebody else. They started to gun the car. The car was coming, began to come faster and faster, and as I tried to get out of the way, I noticed that the wheels actually were turning in my direction. I turned in horror, in other words, fully, and I seen this woman behind that was sitting behind the driver, next to the driver, and it's almost like they had a picture of the guy, and my face was too young for the guy. And they stopped the car. I started to run, and I don't think I would have made it to the other side. I would have been run over that day. As it turns out, the individual they were looking for was living in my building, believe it or not, and he was downstairs from me, and I believe it or not, I knew his elderly mother. but I found out the story much later. I wound up helping him for about 5 or 6 years. Oh. He got run over.
Oh.
And he lost a good portion of his leg.
Oh.
Was taken off, and he was in real bad shape.
He was
a real tough guy. He refused. He didn't let the hospital take his leg off. They wanted to take the leg off 100%. They wouldn't let him do it. And he had all kinds of aches and pains, and fundamentally was basically in the wheelchair.
Well, this is interesting.
Getting around very limitedly. He was a very active guy.
Well, Tom, you hit on that same theme, and in fact, thank you for sharing that. I want to grab Ray before we run out of time. I'll get to everybody who's up on the screen if they can be patient, but Ray has a similar experience as Tom, a story in East Texas. Hey, Ray.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. You're driving through East Texas?
Yes, sir. I sure am. I wanted to share. I work out in a warehouse on a country road. It's a two-lane road, and speed limit is about 60 miles an hour. And I was pulling out my truck early in the morning. I leave about 3 in the morning. So I was pulling out, and I looked to the right, and I saw a car coming. It was about half a mile away. And I decided I'd just sit and wait for him to go by so I didn't have to worry about him running up my tail. And so he went by. So I pulled out on the road behind him, and I'm coming up, and there's a bridge about a half a mile up the road. And as I came up over the bridge, the car had gone up underneath a flatbed truck.
Shut up.
Driver.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And so I, even to this day, and that's been about 10 or 12 years ago, and I still think about that if I had pulled up in front of him and he would have slowed down, he would have been alive. But
yeah.
And by the way, I got up there, and he had gone right up under it, sheared off the top of his car.
Oh, I can only imagine.
So,
oh, that's so interesting. And so you have that same moment of like, and in this case, it's kind of the opposite. I mean, obviously it wasn't a loved one, but you still feel like, oh gosh, you know, if only that could have been a little bit differently. And I'm not surprised. Ray, that's very interesting. Thank you so much. Let's see. Let me get to Annie in Alabama on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Annie?
You want me to tell you about when I was moonstruck, or do you want to hear about my split-second decision?
Moonstruck in the romantic sense?
No.
Well, that's what moonstruck means, isn't it? When you get a crazed romantic night of wild abandonment?
Well, this was different.
Okay, tell me about your moonstruck.
I was 10, and me and my family were outside looking at the moon. It was a full moon. It was extremely large. And I was staring at it because I thought it was interesting and beautiful.
Right.
So when I went in, I went to sleep. I woke up in the middle of the night having a night terror. I never had a night terror but one time in my life. And I was screaming, and my eyes were open, and I was talking to my mother and telling her I was afraid of the moon.
How
and
about
she
that?
She said, it's going to be okay. You're just delirious. It's a bad dream. And I woke up, and so I never had another night terror the rest of my life.
Well, so just so you know, I mean, the only definition I know of moonstruck is when people see just exactly how you described it, except for the fact that they're not 10 years old, and they see the big giant moon, and almost like how people might describe being overcome, you know, by lycanthropy or something, they are suddenly romantic and they're revitalized by the moon. So I'm glad that didn't, I mean, I'm sorry you had the night terrors, but at 10 years old, that would have been way inappropriate for you to be having anything else. So thank you, Annie. Great story. Jeff is in Hutchinson, Kansas, on Coast to Coast AM. Jeff?
Yes, sir. Well, this started when I had my first colonoscopy, and I found out the doctor doing it came in and said, well, I got good information for you, and I got bad information. And I said, well, give me the bad information. He says, well, you got two kinds of cancer. And I said, well, thank you very much. And so I found out I had colorectal cancer, which is two kinds. And I live about 60 miles from Wichita, Kansas, and went in there to see a surgeon. And he told me how long it would go and everything, scheduled it. went in to have the surgery. Thought I had the surgery. I woke up, and they said, well, we couldn't do it because your heart stopped. And it took us 9 minutes to get it started.
Mm.
And I said, holy cow. And they found out that anybody at any time can have this on any surgery because it's everybody's nerve endings in their running up and down their back will make your heart stop.
Hmm.
And so that's what happened to me.
I'll be darned.
They told me, they said, well, this could happen again. I found out that if you set yourself up ahead of time and you can go ahead and cause this not to happen. And when the surgeon told me, well, we worked on you for almost 9 minutes and we got you back and everything was okay. And I said, well, holy cow. I said, I didn't know this was supposed to happen to you. And he said, well, we haven't had it happen to anybody here. You're the first one.
How about that? That's a good cautionary tale for anybody else, though, too, to remember there's that little button somewhere built into us. We got to be careful about. Well, Jeff, we got another Jeff, too, and I want to get everybody in before the top of the hour and we wrap up for tonight. Jeff is in Tennessee, this time east of the Rockies. Hey, Jeff.
Hello.
Hi, second Jeff.
That's where I just want to say hello to you. How are you, co-host, whatever, Deanne?
Yeah, wasn't she great?
Yes, I don't know if she's left the building or what.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, well, what's your name again?
I'm Ian.
Ian? Anyway,
yeah.
I'm just very fond of George Norrie, but anyway, it's all going back in time. I'm going to go back to the time and All the Pretty Horses. Have you ever seen that movie?
Yeah, yeah.
Lucas Black played, was my dad's last name, first and last name. If you were thinking about it, I ain't gonna say my last name, but anyway.
Okay.
I was wanting to ask her and you if y'all thought that possibly some of the wild horses might have been slaughtered, might have been taken care of by the government or somebody, might have been something wrong with them.
Oh, you know, this is a really interesting story. So, I can only tell you what I know about it, which is because I read these stories probably a little bit more than other parts of the country do in the Southwest. We get a lot of wild horses. And there's kind of this big debate on whether, I mean, there's so much time and effort that it takes into taming a wild horse that, and most of the people that get wild horses aren't able really to put the time into them that they need in order to be able to tame them. And there's many people who believe that the most humane thing they can do is to put them down because there's not enough grazing space. The population has exploded. There's too many of them that die of disease and starvation. And other people very, you know, lovingly with their heart in the right place want to save as many wild horses as they can, but there's just not enough homes for them. And then of the people that they do find homes for, do they have enough time to really bring those horses into the place where they can be around kids and families? So it's above my pay grade, but I do follow the story. And especially because around here, it's like, you know, maybe a lot of these wild horses, you might think of them as like getting pit bulls from a pound, you know, and chances are nothing bad will happen. But, you know, you don't know the whole history of how some of those pits ended up in pounds. And so that debate rages on about the killing of the wild horses in the Southwest. I might look at that, Jeff, in Tennessee for a potential, you know, hour show or to take a look at it. There's new information on that coming up because it is a topic that's close to a lot of people. And we only have time for two more callers. So let me get to Matt in San Diego on Coast to Coast AM Open Lines. Matt?
Ian, how you doing?
Good. Where are you with all this?
I was I was down in Baja, California with my brother. We went down and chased our friend's dune buggy doing the Baja 1000, which was more of the vintage.
Right.
Yeah, the Nora, actually.
Right.
And the first day, we're like, we get through the town. It starts in Ensenada, ends in Cabo. And like our first pit, it wasn't even like a pit where we're going to do gas, but we decided to go. We didn't have to. And as we're walking back, my brother's crossing that. It's kind of like it has to do with the desert and danger.
Yeah.
As my brother's crossing back on one of those two-lane highways, there's nowhere to go on either side. And the big white truck coming in, I yelled at him. He didn't hear me because he heard was a truck.
Yeah.
Right. Jump to the side. But that could have been it.
Yeah. Isn't it? I mean, it's those split seconds. I mean, I think that's the part that I'm living with. And, you know, it comes up in dreams and what happens if I honked and nothing came out of the horn. And it's just, very interesting. Well, thank you, Matt. You are the second. Do you pronounce it Phelan in the Irish? Or?
Yes, it is Phelan.
Phelan in your Eugene, Oregon on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Phelan.
Yeah, it's great to hear your voice after, 5 years?
Yeah, it has been 5 years, almost exactly.
I actually wanted to discuss this whole school shooting thing. One thing I have noticed with a lot of these school shootings is that they seem to have a connection to a set of websites known as The Chance. A lot of these people that have committed these crimes frequented these websites, 4chan, 8chan, et cetera.
Yeah.
And this website, these people go here, they post here, and people like enable them and give them pointers on how to do it.
Yeah, there is this sort of sick thing. If I can, just because we're coming up to the end, this kind of thing about don't be a beta and all this pushing toward the beta. It's like the beta's revenge, right? Isn't that what I think that's what my son was saying, Phelan? Like, you can't, they're encouraging these kids to stand up to the alphas. And yeah, that's a whole nother show. Phelan, thank you for jumping in. We are out of time, but time enough to share something I got. There's a guy named Phelan who follows me on Twitter, actually. But I saw something the other day. I'll just end with this. Oh, good. So Paul in Australia tweeted, "Yesterday, 8 days after my final birthday, what I had known within was confirmed. My lung cancer is now stage 4. I've been given 6 months, so 26 weeks, give or take. It is what it is. Within the constraints of money and time, I want to enjoy some stuff. Life is short. Enjoy it." Boy, am I echoing with that with everybody. Please remember, life is short. Enjoy it. Have fun. Go out and make sure you do something fun this week, too. And in the meantime, Deus te amat, and I do, too.